Good morning, Cascadias. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO Portland, Oregon, at 90.7 FM. Today is Monday, July 27th, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia. Long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
Oregon LNG is suing the Port of Astoria. That's how bad they want their lease renewed.
The Colville tribes get a $41 million hatchery, and the wild fish get the shaft.
And downstate in Coos Bay, dirty tricks play out at county commissioners' meetings while activists are on vacation.
Portland area weather, there's a heat advisory on through Thursday. Some places around Portland will be around 100. Not much relief at night, but that's the way it is until Thursday.
First, we go to regional news from around Cascadia. This has been a busy summer for anti-LNG activists on the rivers and on the coasts of Cascadia. This has been at the forefront of the news, environmental, business, political, the whole gamut. And it's a dirty trick that will undoubtedly backfire. Oregon LNG has filed a lawsuit against the Port of Astoria. The liquefied natural gas developer wants to ensure a lease gets renewed as a deadline approaches with unanswered questions about who really owns the land. My guest this morning is Dan Sears with Columbia Riverkeeper, back to help clarify this particular boondoggle. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Chris.
Thanks so much for being with us again today. A lot is going on with Bradwood Landing and now Warrington, and this lawsuit suddenly has popped up, and it seems like they're throwing a lot at anti-LNG people at this particular time. Can you talk about this a bit?
Sure. Well, the specific issue today is, you know, this decision by Oregon LNG to sue the Port of Astoria in order to basically force them to renew the lease that the port has with the state of Oregon. The Port of Astoria essentially gets no benefit out of its lease with the state of Oregon. All the money it receives from Oregon LNG goes straight to the Department of State Lands. So the port really wanted to do an investigation into how it got committed to such a bad lease and whether it was even legal. So really what the port is trying to do is just to answer some very basic questions and do some due diligence that wasn't done in the beginning. Oregon LNG's move is really basically an intimidation tactic. Try to push the port into a corner, and people all over Clatsop County are going to be really angry when they find out that Oregon LNG is trying to push their commissions around.
Oh, they're bullying. They're just bullies. And it seems, though, that more it looks like it's quite likely that there may be recall campaigns for some of the other commissioners. What are the chances of that?
Well, it's a separate issue in that Oregon LNG is going after the Port of Astoria Commission, whereas there is an effort now, apparently, in Clatsop County to recall the county commissioners. So there's two different commissions. The Port of Astoria Commission doesn't necessarily oppose the Oregon LNG project. They're just trying to do a little bit of research about why they have such a bad lease deal.
How does this play, then, into the environmentalist activities in the interest of stopping the Bradwood Landing and the Warrington Terminal going in?
You know, one of the key things to look at here is the state's role in leasing this land to Oregon LNG. It's completely at the discretion of the Oregon Department of State Lands and the governor's office as to whether really either of these projects go forward. Oregon LNG doesn't deserve the right to use state-owned land for a project that's going to really harm the interests of thousands of Oregonians. And so, you know, we're calling on the state government to step in and help back up the Port of Astoria in not renewing this lease.
And a lot of this has to do with former port director Peter Guerin, who, in fact, pled guilty to violating the Federal Clean Water Act a while back there, too.
Yeah, there were a lot of very shady dealings at the very beginning of Oregon LNG's project, back when they were Calpine, 5 years ago. And so it really doesn't make sense to renew and commit the port to 30 more years for a lease deal that is not even in the financial interest of the Port of Astoria.
Thank you so much for that. My guest has been Dan Sears with Columbia Riverkeeper. Thank you.
Thank you.
In Coos Bay, port officials have asked the county to change the zoning for the Kentuck Golf Course so LNG developers can use the land for wetland mitigation. Jordan Cove Energy Project needs to offset subtidal damage from building a slip dock as part of its LNG terminal construction on the North Spit. It has agreed to an option to buy the golf course, which is still open for business. The Oregon International Port of Coos Bay has applied for a hearing to zone the golf course for exclusive farm use that would allow mitigation and restoration work. The Coos County Planning Commission will consider the application on August 6th.
And more news from Coos Bay, where the fight goes on to prevent the development of a natural gas terminal at Jordan Cove. This particular struggle is waged exclusively by grassroots activists without any real serious support from any national or even state environmental organizations. This is a completely bootstrap effort. The Jordan Cove Energy Company is now one step closer to their liquefied natural gas terminal after Coos County Commission has unanimously approved their initial land use application. Joining us today is Jody McCaffrey, one of the lead activists in the effort to stop this terminal from being built in Coos Bay. Good morning, Jody.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being back with us today. Tell us a little bit about what the meeting was actually like.
Well, when we walked in, they handed us papers that basically told what the outcome was going to be. So, and then we were not allowed to hand in any written statements. It had to be all oral, and you had to be also someone that had already testified in the previous application hearings. It was, and then they would not let you say, I mean, they kept stopping you. You couldn't say, if they decided what you said was not something that they approved of. So it was really pretty unsettling to watch, actually,
and to participate in. And so tell us a little bit, who did you have representing your side?
I was the person that our attorneys, the Southern Oregon Pipeline Information Project, which had been the group that had actually appealed the decision, the attorneys could not be there. I mean, the notices went out. They got them the 6th. They had other obligations, and this was like two and a half weeks later.
So who are you up against?
I was up against their Portland high-dollar attorneys, two of them, on the other side. And I'm just a citizen activist. I'm not an attorney. So it was very stressful. And even though we're right, you're going up against people that know how to talk the legal mumble-jumble, which I don't. So, you know, it was very stressful. But...
And
you know,
one other quick question, too. This is, of course, a really huge story. These terminals are enormous, vast operations. Putting one in Coos Bay will completely, utterly, permanently change the character of the Oregon coast. Everyone in Cascadia ought to be standing on the rooftops yelling about this. What sort was the mainstream media represented at all? Were any national affiliates there covering this story?
We just had our local TV coverage that covered it.
And no national affiliates bothered to attend?
No. And it does have implications. I know that your show is mostly broadcast in the Portland area, but it's very important because if any of these terminals actually make it through, it's going to impact all Oregonians because this gas, that each terminal will bring in more gas, foreign gas, than the entire state uses. And these are all to go to gas-fired power plants, which will actually compete with our renewable industry that's beginning to boom in Oregon. So
we're basically shooting ourselves in the foot by even considering this. Jody, that's all we have time for today. We'd love to have you back. There's more to talk about. Thank you so much. And we have information here at the radio at the station. You can call in if you want to support the efforts of activists like Jody McCaffrey, my guest this morning. Thanks a lot, Jody.
Thank you.
Here's a pseudo-debate par excellence. Some residents in West Lynn and Oregon City are gearing up for a battle with the Oregon Department of Transportation over a proposal to install a solar highway along southbound I-205 in West Lynn. Solar highways are among wind turbine and wave energy projects Oregon deploys in enhancing its green image. Opponents of the project don't like the idea of cutting down all the trees to make way for the solar panels and leaving taxpayers to foot the bill with generous tax credits. another techno solution benefiting business and promoting growth?
It's the part about cutting down all the trees to install solar panels that I like the best. What looks good from the distance sometimes smells bad up close, and that's the case with the poisonous relationship between tribal politics, fish hatcheries, and the federal government. It's an ecotastrophe trifecta. The Confederated Tribes of the Colville Reservation have got a $41 million hatchery on the launch pad with the goal to boost salmon runs on the Upper Columbia River. That's the mass media version, anyway. The reality is that the only thing that the hatcheries boost is the income for the entrepreneurs behind the deal. My guest this morning is William Blair. Over three decades of activism in the forests and on the rivers of Cascadia. Good morning, William, and thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning. I sure appreciated the context of the previous guests because they went right to the heart of the people's. And in the case where we have a veil in collaboratives, collaborative governance mitigation has replaced restoration. So whether you're on the coast in the ocean or you're in the high mountains, the corporate veils and the corporations themselves look for institutions that can veil their activities.
So it's this has been kept hidden. Most people actually think that hatcheries aren't such a bad thing. The destruction that they've already done to existing native wild fish stocks is inestimable. The numbers are staggering. Can you talk a little bit about this recent Colville, this $41 million deal, and what this could potentially do to the dwindling stocks of wild salmon?
The purpose of the Colville hatchery is fairly clear. It's an ocean farming construct. It is not and has nothing to do with restoration principles based on the known restoration principles in science. The PR regimes have to get it through as a hatchery fish or wild stock. The Northwest Indian Fish Commission, various other PR fronts are pushing the ideology, the false ideology that hatcheries are saving the wild runs. There's no evidence in history that a hatchery has ever saved a wild run.
In fact, they are more, as I understand it, more detrimental to it. What effect do they have on wild runs?
Well, you're breaking through a very critical thing, and that is even beyond the local genetic characters of the fish, you're looking at a population dynamic. And in block of fish management, which is hatcheries, you crowd a run into a very tight quarter. They come through fast in a very sharp peak, and the aspects would involve an impact by those fish dynamically on the wild fish, meaning if you have a crowded bunch of hatchery fish into a block, then you're going to hit the wild existing population underneath that stock as well and at an excessive rate.
So it seems it's a $41 boondoggle and a really bad idea all around. My guest today has been William Blair. He has been working to restore, to preserve wild fish and our the environment in Cascadia for over 30 decades now. We are really honored to have Mr. Blair as a guest. Thank you so much for that, William.
Thank you, and look forward to more discussion with you.
There will be.
Time to suit up and hit the streets in the name of the sacred earth beneath it. There will be a vigil this evening at 6 p.m. in Pioneer Courthouse Square for Leonard Peltier. Dorothy Ackerman, Sioux Elder on the Grand Council of the American Indian Movement, will be there. Peltier has recently applied for and been granted a parole hearing, and that hearing is scheduled for tomorrow. The website you want is whoisleonardpeltier.info, or more importantly, just show up tonight, 6 o'clock, Pioneer Square.
In the biggest windfall ever to hit the medical insurance industry since it came into existence, the major health care bills moving through Congress would require nearly all Americans to buy health insurance. The ever-helpful Senator Ron Wyden said some families, quote, may not get much of a subsidy, close quote, to help with their premiums. There are a lot of fixes out there, but in the end, buying medical insurance is betting money that you're going to get sick. It isn't the same thing as medical care. If you need that, try Las Vegas.
From the Oregonian, quote, last year, researchers at Oregon State University, the University of Washington, and McGill University took one-day samples from 96 Oregon sewage treatment plants that volunteered to participate. They tested for the presence of chemicals indicating methamphetamine, cocaine, and MDMA, or ecstasy. Then they estimated the daily drug load per person for each community. Cocaine showed up in 80% of the communities tested. Ecstasy, the one-time party drug, now spreading to other venues, in about 40%. And meth appeared in every test, from Oregon's smallest towns to its biggest cities. All this in just one day, March 4th, 2008. If you remember that day, you weren't there.
Friday morning, when so many of us were safe and too warm, perhaps in our dwellings or at our jobs, low-income and Section 8 tenants held an informational picket against a so-called non-profit slumlord Central City Concern. Mainstream media was invited but chose not to attend. Portland Indie Media says, quote, for a year, tenants have protested, written, and organized against CCC management practices. Friday's picket was prompted by the reinstatement after suspension of Greg Green, a building manager who's accused by tenants of sexual harassment, along with promoting and getting kickbacks on drugs and prostitution taking place inside the buildings.
This has been Air Cascadia for Monday, July 27th, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Engineering is Tammy Dean. The Cable Interim AM News and Public Affairs Director is Trillium Shannon, in for Kathleen Stevenson on sabbatical. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to member-supported KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members. Thanks for listening and have a good day.